Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Teacher's Lounge with Mrs. G. I'm Mrs. G, Jenna Gonzalez, first grade teacher, podcast host, and lead interior designer in room 26. And I have to tell you guys, moving into a new classroom is seriously no joke. So if you have never done it, just like be thankful. And if you have done it, just go with me here because I have been hauling things to the trash for the past month and you would not believe the amount of stuff that would be packed in such a tiny room. Things that I'm pretty sure teachers in the 80s looked at and were like, a little outdated. Like, that's the kind of stuff that has been saved in this room. So I think we need to start some real, like, conversations about how A&E needs to be going into veteran teacher classrooms and doing, like, summer specials of hoarders, like a teacher edition. And I would suggest that they start with almost any classroom that I've moved into because they have mostly been terrifyingly packed to the gills with tons of stuff. And that's just been my week, is just like walking to the dumpster, walking back, walking to the dumpster again, walking back, and then like labeling 3,000 books in between. But this week on the pod, I'm chatting with one of my very best teacher friends. She started as just one of like the nicest people that I met when I first started teaching in our district. And now she was the only person on my side of the fountain when my husband and I got shotgun married at the Civic Center locally. And then she was also the first person other than me or my husband to hold baby Gus when he was born. So she's a really big deal to me personally, but also just in general. And she has tons of experience teaching in SoCal, teaching in NorCal, all over the place, private school, public school, every grade. K-8, she says later on. So she knows a lot of stuff. And you'll notice that our interview ends very abruptly because she, as we're talking, I look out the window and this adorable line of just like tiny people with book bags were coming in because she does summer book shopping in the summer for her little kiddos, her little kindies. So guys, see, she's the greatest and you're going to love her. So enjoy. I bet Anne would do the podcast if she were here.
Oh, she would call it in from heaven.
She should.
Anne would. Oh my God, it would be the best podcast ever.
No, but that was what I was thinking is like, dang, Anne has so many stories.
I mean, for real.
And no filter. It would be a good one. But I guess I'll do with you.
Right? I'm all you got. I'm gonna need some ginkgo biloba to, access the memory bank.
Okay, well, we won't go too far back. Let's just go at least. So what did you want to be when you grew up?
A mom.
That's it, huh?
That's it.
Just a mom?
Just a mom.
Nothing. And how, but even all the way through like
all
high school?
All the way through high school.
Just a mom?
Yeah, most of college.
So when you sat down with when you went to the counselor's office and sat down and they said, Jennifer, what's the career path you're going for? How can we help you?
It was tough. In spring of my senior year of college at UCLA, my dad sat me down and said, so about your job. And I was like, I'm still in school. And he goes, yeah, but you're not going to be in school in a few months. What's your plan? I was like,
but what were you majoring in?
I was a history major.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you do with that. Everyone told me I would have to be a history teacher. And I was like, I don't want to be a history teacher.
But what was your plan?
I don't recall having one. I knew that with my degree, I would get a job. And I just assumed it would be figured out after college.
Okay.
So my dad sent me to the Career Center. And I can't remember exactly what, you know, you take one of those tests, and I don't know what it said, but I do remember taking some online tests later, and pretty much a lot of the feedback I got over time was like, you would make a really good receptionist.
No.
Uh-huh. And I was like, yeah, not my life plan. Don't have a life plan, but it's have not, no intention it's not that. Of being a receptionist or somebody's secretary. And so I really wanted to keep going to school. So I finally listened to all the voices that had told me my entire life that I would make a great teacher. And I think I was resisting it. And so I was like, oh, can I get a master's degree? Because I'd really love a master's degree. And so I found a master's degree program at UCLA. And then I became a teacher.
So you did get your master's?
Oh, yeah.
You did? I didn't know that.
At UCLA.
In education?
Master's of education from UCLA. Between undergrad and graduate school, I taught for a year at the Carl Thorpe School in Santa Monica, California. Mm-hmm. And I was a PE teacher /
what?
Playground supervisor.
Guys, if you've never met Jen, you would not know this, but I don't think there's a day goes by that she's not in a dress, a strappy sandal, hair done. It's not a PE teacher material.
That was a difficult fashion year for me that involved purchasing shorts that I didn't want to wear. And granted, it was the late 80s. So
they were even better than regular shorts, is what you're telling me.
It was sort of post the CP Shades shoulder pad era, of which I was a huge participant in college, and a lot of loud prints. But I defaulted to Koala Blue, which was Olivia Newton-John's.
Okay.
Australian store in West Hollywood. And I wore a lot of those with the shorts I didn't want to be in. And Reeboks.
Oh, with like, did you have to do the sock and then roll down the sock?
Because
I feel like that was the thing that we did.
I'm going to have to call Carl Thorpe and ask for some archival photographs of me on the
podcast. We're going to need that. You don't have a yearbook or a...
I don't think in the yearbook my shoes were necessarily shown.
Dang it.
But I'm pretty sure under the Koala Blue was a collared shirt with the collar turned up. That is highly likely.
That is also a great... At least you made it work for you, is what it sounds like.
I always tried to do that. And the hair was big, and there was some fake tan involved.
But you lived in SoCal. Why do you need a fake tan? Because just go stand out in the sun?
It was the 80s, and that's what we did.
You all just went tanning?
We went tanning.
And no one was worried about skin cancer?
No.
Don't you worry.
Nobody was worried in ninth grade when we lathered our bodies in baby oil.
And then just were outside.
We just got burned. That's just what you did. It wasn't a good day unless you got burned.
Oh, boy.
I know differently now.
How long were you a PE teacher?
So I did that for a year while I applied to graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to graduate school.
Right. Okay.
And that was a year and a half program. And when I graduated, I went back to teach kindergarten at Carl Thorpe School.
Okay. Better fit.
Yeah. Much. And then I only taught there a year before I relocated to San Francisco.
And what was the driving force behind moving to San Francisco?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that
Okay, sounds good.
It involves an ex-husband.
Okay, well then. You know what, though? This is a running theme so far. I've only talked to three people. All three people have moved to the Bay Area because they were following a husband or a boyfriend or just a man. Somehow, for some reason, men are just dragging their wives / girlfriends to San Francisco just constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then you were in Marin. You were in the city.
I lived in the city, but I immediately got a job teaching in Marin. And I taught at a private school in Marin for 3 years. And
still
then,
doing kindergarten or no?
No, it was a interesting school with, like, I don't know how to describe it. You taught a bunch of different subjects in a bunch of different grade levels. Like, I had a fifth grade homeroom, and I taught first through fifth grade math, fourth and fifth grade social studies, fourth grade art.
That doesn't seem like enough hours in a day to do all of those things.
It was tricky. And then I taught outdoor ed for fourth through seventh grade.
And what's then, outdoor ed?
Like their big outdoor ed programs where you either take, I would go with the sixth grade to the Gold Country for their outdoor education, kind of like Walker Creek.
Yeah.
When you did it for fifth grade.
So, well, it's like science camp, basically, or what?
It was just their outdoor ed week. And somehow being the semi-single young teacher, mm-hmm. I was always thrown on the overnights.
Because they're like, you don't have a family that's worried about you.
Exactly.
No one will miss you for a week.
Bear. Nobody will miss you. And then I took the seventh grade. Where'd we go? To the Marin Headlands. But my fourth and fifth grade, those were more interesting. Those were definitely driven by the teachers. And we wrote the curriculum. And we took the fourth grade to Tomales Bay, to Heart's Desire Beach, studying the Miwok. Did a whole overnighter, you know.
Sounds fun.
And then tried to make food that matched and do activities that matched and sort of a real life experience. And then the same with fifth grade, but at Fort Ross for colonialism.
That's so cool. That sounds fun, though.
Yeah. No,
to
that
write
was super
your own,
fun.
To write all your own curriculum and
do a lot of work. It was one of those, in hindsight, really should have gotten some PTA moms to help out. Where like I'm running to Costco and I'm paying for all the food and then waiting to get reimbursed. And I look back and laugh at, you know.
Yeah, we're spoiled here, though.
Well, yeah. Which I like. I know
Me
how to
too.
Delegate now.
So that was a private school,
mm-hmm.
but eventually you moved to a public school.
Yes. Then I taught for a year in Woodside at Woodside School, mm-hmm. and I taught third grade. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to be back in the Marin area, so I got a job with the Reed Union School District in Tiburon.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught third grade there for, I think, 3 or 4 years. And then
it feels like you've just taught every grade.
I've taught every grade K-8, and I've tutored K-12.
Yeah.
For a long time.
You do everything. How do you keep it all? How do you just, ow.
I could have a one-room schoolhouse.
You could.
All the different ages. I'd be the queen of differentiation.
That's true. But how do you keep it all in your head, or how do you keep it all organized?
I don't know. I mean, I think I've always believed teaching was about guiding.
Mm-hmm.
And so the curriculum part, the topic part, you know, that might shift with grade levels.
Right.
And then the specific skill-based learning shifts.
Right.
But I think the overall approach to teaching is the same. I mean, when I got thrown in, some gal went on maternity leave at this private school in Mill Valley, and I taught eighth grade algebra for the first time, like mid-year.
Mm-hmm.
Clueless. Oh. But when you're 26, you kind of can do anything.
Make it up.
And so I was able to teach the curriculum because I'm good at math, and that wasn't a problem. But in terms of dealing with the kids and behavior management and just all that kind of stuff, instructional management, I sort of reverted to what I was using in the primary grades, and it worked just fine. They loved stickers, you know.
In the eighth grade?
They did. They were surprisingly motivated by things that I didn't think they would care about.
Yeah.
And
do you think that would work today?
I don't know. Kids today are definitely different, and that was, when was that? That was early 90s, I guess, at that point, and you know, they didn't have smartphones or the internet or anything like that. But what really worked great was doing the TPR and taking the kids out to the Foursquare and using that to physically map coordinates.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And do the four quadrants. And that was highly successful. And that just came out of me, I think, applying my elementary school vibe to algebra. And it was really successful because it was also the kind of pre-algebra class that was the lower performing kids, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was really...
Yeah. So I was in that class, basically, is what you're saying.
Yes, and you would have loved my stickers.
I would have. Really, though. I had a math teacher in college that gave stickers, and I loved it.
Right?
I did the thing
is
where
that
you,
why
like,
you're a teacher?
Trace the stickers. Well, you know why I went into teaching. Because in first grade, my first grade teacher, Miss Steinhardt, shouts to Miss Steinhardt, she had this dinosaur stamp and she let me stamp all the spelling tests with it. And I was like, done.
I wish
this is the life I want for me.
I wish podcasts could record facial expressions because that's half the fun right now. It's like the awe and shock on our faces.
That's true.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I think when you do look back, first grade for me, I had Miss Perkins for first and second, and I worshipped her.
Hmm.
And I think when I started becoming a teacher, it was definitely, she was one of the people that I thought back on just loving that.
Yeah.
And probably influenced me teaching in the primary grades. And then it was my seventh grade teacher, Mrs. Menzies, who was also the headmistress at Carlthorpe, who recruited me.
Okay.
That totally influenced me because she, in seventh grade, she didn't give stickers. She was just, I don't know, she was super firm
mm-hmm.
and fair and yeah. very clear about her expectations, but
yes.
like gentle about the redirect, you know, when you were like heading in the wrong direction.
Sure.
Somehow she didn't shame you, but yeah. got you to redo the entire project.
Wow.
Yeah. She had a little gift there. And then was an incredible headmistress. She just retired, I think, 2 years ago.
I know. It's fun to think about all the teachers that I had and the things that I do and don't do because of the teachers that I had.
Oh, for sure.
And then sometimes I think like, ah, shoot. I wonder if like anyone will remember me in this bad way or if they'll remember me in this good way. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like if I have one of those really terrible days with my class, because we all have really terrible days where you're just like a pirate basically the whole day where you're just like,
arr. That would like, be the R-controlled vowel with an A.
And you're a pirate on a day where it's not a fun pirate day. You're a pirate on the day where you're just like, I can't with any of you.
Well, and you're not the pirate that can send someone down the plank and push them over.
No.
No, you can't.
You can't send them out to the bench outside your classroom.
Which
That's
is like,
about as far.
What would that be? The brig?
Yeah.
yeah.
Go peel some potatoes.
And really, you just can't wait to get to the galley. For
What's
your
the
lunch
galley?
Break. Isn't
oh,
that
yeah.
the kitchen?
Maybe. I don't know about boating. I feel like that's something you would know more about than I would.
I think boating and piracy might be two different things. But I'm not sure. Don't quote me on
Again,
that.
Again, don't know.
Don't know.
So in this long, illustrious career, how far until the first baby? Because originally we went into this for you to be a mom.
I know, right?
Yeah. So.
Well, that circles us back to the reason I moved to the Bay Area, to which I plead the fifth.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Which would be an ex-husband.
Right.
Well, let's not get into detail on that.
Well, not detail.
He was the delay on having children.
Got it. Okay.
And starting. So it did take until I was 35 to have my first child. And at that point, I was still with the Reed Union School District, but I had left the classroom and became the district's first technology coordinator.
Nice.
And I trained teachers to use technology. And
what kind of technology was it at the time?
Well, it was interesting. It really, the year I started would have been, I guess it was late 90s, so like, I don't know, 98-ish, and teachers were being given laptop computers for the first time.
For to put their files on?
To
or for the classroom?
To start using technology in instruction.
Okay.
And so beginning to project and use your laptop and, I mean.
You could project on your laptop? In the late 90s? Yeah, I guess 98.
That's a really good question.
Yeah,
I feel like
we were still on overhead projectors.
Yes, there was still a lot of that. No, you're right. I can't. Don't quote me on that.
Maybe I just went to poor schools.
No, I don't know.
That's probably where that goes.
What was new about it was teachers were given email addresses. And there were teachers, you know, who'd been teaching for 35 years,
right.
who were in their maybe early 60s.
Right.
And it was foreign to them. And so a big part of my job was teaching people not only to use email and mm-hmm. how to create diss lists. And some of them didn't understand the concept of it. And so it was, well, I don't understand what a URL is and what's an address.
Right.
And then the fear of, well, I'm not going to ever use that to communicate with parents. I'll just send a note home.
Most parents have email at that time, do you think?
I think the last people to get it were lawyers and teachers, but yes. Like
the last people to get email were lawyers and teachers?
Yeah, I don't understand the lawyer thing.
I would feel like they would need to be first. Bill those hours while you're typing out an email.
Right. I think something about the fear of the spread of information.
Oh, right. Yeah. No. Yeah.
But for teachers, it was just, you know, being behind the eight ball on, you know, progress.
Right.
And technology and the money that needs to back that up. So I had a science teacher at Del Mar Middle School who absolutely refused to use a computer. She had conspiracy theories.
Oh, I would love to know some of them.
I know. She didn't think technology had a role in education, and she refused to be forced to use it. And when I went to the administration and said, you know, she won't accept the device and she won't use it. And they were like, well, that's your job to convince her.
Well, good thing that your career path was supposed to be a receptionist or customer service.
When all I
wanted
to be was a mom.
I know. But even in a mom, you got to do a lot of customer service when you're a mom, because you got to convince them to do all sorts of things, or convince them that all sorts of things are like fine. Like,
totally.
No, really, this slide is great. Totally. You go down it, you're going to love it.
Well, and I think the receptionist is the teacher that greets the parents, you know, at arrival every day.
Which you're the best at, parents.
I try. I'm a people person.
That's true.
But anyway, it was interesting. And then I had Lucy. And so I retired from that district. And I did private tutoring while she was little. And then I had a second child, Clara Mae, whom you know well.
I do. I know. Well, I know Lucy
girls.
Well as well. But I met, isn't it funny to think that I met them when they were going into fifth and going into second?
And then you taught, oh yeah. Oh God. And now they're going into seventh.
No, I was just thinking more of like they're tenth. Going into seventh and they're going into 10th. And I just remember Clara pouring salt on a chip. Like I'll never forget just little
Clara. Oh my gosh.
Clara
at the cantina.
Pouring salt. No, at Laura's house.
Oh.
At the end of the year party, the summer before I started. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't know who these people are, but I like these people.
Because they pour salt.
No, she was just, she was pouring salt. She was doing an English accent. She was just like, I don't know. And you were the only one that was talking to me. Everyone else looked at me like I was like a crazy person. Like they were like, why are you here? You don't even start until August. I just remember like multiple teachers giving me just like the tilt. They just kind of like tilted their head to the side like, oh.
Like, I think you and I are an anomaly in education in that we're, I don't know, maybe more social or more.
First of all, my parents are probably the only people to listen to this, and they are right now emailing me that no,
you are not social. Well, I don't know. I mean, at least with each other, I think. As colleagues, definitely.
Yes, that's true.
Like we know how to build a relationship and
yeah,
and all that,
and be nice to new teachers.
Oh my God, that is started at Old Mill,
yeah,
I love you all, but not all of you were very nice, and most
Which
of the people that weren't nice.
Karen said the exact same thing when she started at Old Mill.
Interesting.
She had a ton of people not being nice to her, but so I don't know if it's just a thing. Maybe it's just like a thing about having a small school.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's a theme at other schools where the newbie, you know what I mean, is maybe not given such a welcome greeting, and maybe it is common.
Maybe, but you, speaking from experience of transferring schools this very minute, they couldn't be more welcoming. So I don't, but I'm coming from the same district, so maybe it's not the same thing, but I don't know. I don't know what
it
maybe, is about like a small school versus a big school where it's just like,
yeah,
they're
maybe.
Used to getting new people more, and at a small school, you're not used to getting new people, so you're a little more standoffish. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't either.
I mean, I think it depends. When you came in, you and Diana and Amy and Katie all came at the same time.
There was a lot
time.
Of change that year.
And I remember making a conscious effort because my transition had been challenging. And literally,
yes.
Most of those challenging personalities have moved on, which helps. Mm-hmm. But I was determined not to let you guys feel like outsiders and to make sure that you felt welcome and that you became friends and a part of the group. But I remember one of the teachers here who's lovely, but she had said, and she wasn't that friendly to me at the beginning, we're a tight-knit family. And she kept saying that as if you're not in it yet. You haven't been adopted. And I'd be sitting at the lunch table going,
we haven't sent you the official invitation.
Right? So apparently I'm on the B list. And I see it now, you know, that we do become a very tight-knit family. And I think that's awesome.
Yes.
But it can also be insular. It's like bringing in an in-law.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
It was like I was the in-law for the first few years.
Right.
And then when the new in-laws show up, all of a sudden you're actually family because they're the new in-laws. And so
sounds
you
so backwards,
were the new
but
in-law.
That's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
No, everyone was very nice. Maybe it's, and also you came in a year where it was just you were new.
I was the only new elementary teacher in the district that year. And I had
what?
Been a long-term sub the year before.
Right.
It was 2011 when I became a full-time teacher here. And yeah, there were no new hires that year.
Which is weird because the year that I was hired, There were so
many. There was a ton, and that was only...
It's only 5 years ago.
Well, this will be my 8th year. So it must have been 2 years. When did you come? 12 or 13?
12.
Oh, so maybe that year when I taught first grade full-time after doing a long-term sub, which was basically full-time. I started early in the fall of 2010. Yeah, I guess they did hire.
Yeah, they did. And then they kept hiring. Don't you feel like there's just like always... Most of our back-to-school breakfast is mostly just new teachers standing up.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. It has been more like that.
But I guess not now that we're...
that apparently. That the pendulum has swung on new hires.
Oh, boy. Guys, we're closing classrooms left and right around here.
Just stop increasing class size. Stop the madness.
So...
How many kids do you think you'll have next year?
I don't know. I tried to get some info on that by asking the secretary how many first day letters, you know how they send the first day. I was like, oh, how many copies should I make? Like trying to get, trying to like pump her for info. And she said, we'll start with 20 and then we'll see if we need any more.
Yeah, I don't know about their numbers there. I would ask one of the kindergarten teachers. They'll completely know. They'll like the list on their computer.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, they'll totally know. I know exactly who's in each of the two first grade classrooms here.
Well, I know you know because you made the lists.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Ask
a kindergarten teacher. A teacher for the list. Yes. Okay.
Exactly.
God, gotcha.
And I know my list because I made the list. And then things can change over the summer, but really it's...
That is the nice thing about kindergarten is you meet your kids like before the old kids are even gone, you meet your new kids.
Yes. You meet them as a grade level, but you don't know who you're getting. And then and then you make the list and you hope.
Then you do the draft.
You do the draft.
Do the kindergarten
draft.
Cross your fingers
that you did it right. Let's talk about having a classroom that's more than 2/3 boy.
Oh, yeah.
And what would you recommend are some good strategies for setting up either the schedule and the feel of the day in terms of getting enough brain and body breaks.
I know.
Just overall, like I want to, I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
Well, it's nice that they're kindies because you can just do recess whenever.
That's true.
So you can like,
totally.
You can shift it. That is the nice thing is that you can shift your recess around a little bit. Whereas by the time they get to first grade, you're like, you're here all day. Recess is at this time. Best of luck.
That's true.
So you could move your recess up a little earlier or do more shorter recesses.
Yeah, I definitely think we need to increase our outdoor time, but I feel like it should also be in small batches.
Oh, you got choppers.
Oh, well, it's been lovely talking to you.
See you later. All right, that's the end of episode 3. Thank you so much for being here and listening. If you enjoy the show, you should subscribe on iTunes and then also rate it 5 stars because that is just a nice thing to do, and I know that you're a nice person. You can follow me on Instagram at the Teachers Lounge Pod. And if you have any suggestions for Jen about what she should do with her 15 boy kindergarten class, how to make it manageable, you could email me at theteachersloungepod@gmail.com. You can go check out our website, theteachersloungepod.com. So any of those places, I'm there. I'm happening. I have a presence now on the internet. I'm sure my parents are very proud. Anyways, have a fantastic week and we'll talk soon. Bye.